Welcome to episode 310 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. I'm your host, Ian Martin, and today we're going to be finding out about the ski resorts of Risoul and Var in France, discovering what it's like to take part in a very unusual triathlon, and looking at how it can improve your ski mindset. But before we meet today's guests, and for the final time this season, I would like to thank Tyrol Austria for sponsoring the Ski Podcast and making all of this winter's episodes possible. Look, that's not strictly true. I love producing the podcast, and I'd probably keep bringing out episodes whether there was a sponsor or not. But I appreciate Tyrol's support this winter. And what's made it even better is that I've enjoyed finding out more about the area that I went to a lot when I was a kid and where I learned to ski. I've had so much feedback from listeners about Tyrol. It's clear that our series of episodes on the different resorts and destinations have prompted a lot of memories and a lot of people to return. So listener, if you miss them, don't forget, you can catch up on them all in our back catalogue. Right, let's move on to today's guests. My first guest joins us today for her first time on the podcast. Lou Pode is a personal development coach with a particular focus on ski mindset, something we're going to be discussing later on. Hi, Lou. How are you?
Hi. No, I'm really good and delighted to be here. Even though it's the end of the season, always love talking about ski mindset and how to overcome that anxiety and build that confidence on the slope. So thank you for inviting me in.
It's a pleasure. Whereabouts are you today?
I'm up near Chester, looking out on a very sunny blue sky out there. Gorgeous spring weather. Loving it.
Excellent. Fantastic. Now, my second guest will be familiar to many of our regular listeners. He's been on the podcast many times before, both in his role as COO of the Ski Club of Great Britain, founder of the BTB networking event Listex, and most recently in episode 260 as the organiser of the London Snow Show. We will touch on the London show today, but mainly we're going to be asking him about ski resorts of Risoul and Var, which he's recently become an expert on, as we'll find out later. Hi, James. How are you?
Hey, Ian. I'm very well, thank you. Great to be back on the podcast.
Oh, and whereabouts are you today?
I am in a very sunny, just outside of Tunbridge Wells. I can almost see the Bowles dry ski slope from my window. If the trees didn't have so many leaves on, I could just see it. So, you know, I'm kind of still in a ski resort if you stretch that enough.
I like the way you're stretching that. Regulars will know I'm based in Chamonix at the moment. If I turn to my left, I can see Mont Blanc. And in fact, every morning, one of the first things I do is I get the binoculars out and I have a look up on the glacier to see what tiny little ants are ascending Mont Blanc today. And I saw some people going up the Mallory route, climbing, some ski tourers going out of the Grand Moulet hut. It's constantly entertaining and changing. We are going to mention the skiing here as well, but a question I always like to ask my guests is, when did you ski or snowboard last? So that first question goes to you, Lou. When were you last on snow?
I was last on snow at the end of January, and I was skiing in Chatel with the family, having a fantastic week. Loved it. Great fun. We always ski with a great Swiss ski mountaineer friend of ours, and it was his 70th season this year. How incredible is that? Aims and goals. So yeah, that was the last time I was skiing.
I mean, if that was his 70th season, how old is he?
78.
That is very impressive. And Chatel is a resort I know reasonably well. I did my first ski season there a very long time ago now. It links in fantastically with the Port de Soleil ski area. What was the snow like when you were there?
Fantastic. I mean, the best in years. We arrived and it just snowed the week before. The sun shone pretty much every day, bar one day. It was fabulous. Really fabulous. Such a treat.
Excellent. Now, James, I think I might know the answer to this question, but you can tell us anyway. When were you last on snow?
So I was last on snow exactly a week ago today. So last Thursday, my last day of the season, I was lucky enough to be in Whistler in Canada. I was out there for the Mountain Travel Symposium conference. I'd been out there the week before when it hit, I think, 21 degrees centigrade in the village. So it was very warm and very soft. We then had 2 days in the Whistler Conference Centre for the symposium. During those 2 days, it dropped to -8 and it snowed about 20 centimetres. So on the Thursday, everybody was out on the mountain. So yeah, I had a brilliant last day of the season, fresh snow, low temperatures, skiing with lots and lots of friends from the industry. So a fantastic way to end the season for me.
So a 28-degree shift in temperature over a couple of days. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, astonishing. Absolutely. It literally went. I mean, I kind of, you know, we were skiing in, you know, the lightest possible ski wear, and I suddenly had to kind of, you know, scrabble around in my bag and find, you know, Gore-Tex jackets and fleeces and everything else. Yeah, it was quite extraordinary. It was just winter kind of came back with a vengeance, which, you know, can happen obviously this time of year, but that was a pretty big swing, right?
Well, as I mentioned before, I'm still in Chamonix. There's only Grand Monte open now, but I last skied on Sunday and there is still some great skiing to be had. You definitely need to be an early starter and to pick your slopes based on the time of day and the aspect. Get it wrong and it can be boilerplate solid early on or wet slush later on, but at the right time. There's some really good quality skiing to be done on-piste and some nice corn skiing off-piste. I should add, at this time last week, I took a day trip to Verbier and had a brilliant day skiing there. It's just over an hour to Le Chable from Chamonix, and the open area was significantly bigger than what's available at Grand Monte, with the snow in excellent condition. And you have lift serve skiing up to 3,300 metres on 1-4. And from there, on the north-facing slopes, actually skied some really nice, light, chopped-up powder. And you could still ski down carefully all the way to Medran at 1,500 metres. Verbier closes this weekend, so that leaves the Grand Monte in Chamonix as one of the few ski areas still open. We do have snow reports from a couple of the others that are still open, thanks to regular contributors Alex Armand from Tip Top Ski Coaching in Ladies Out and Floss Cockle from the YouTube channel Free Flow Floss, who's been skiing in Val Thorens. We also have a final La Plan snow report from Jess Sang, who runs the website That's La Plan, before they close there this weekend.
Hi, this is Alex from Tip Top Ski Coaching here in Ladies Out with the latest snow report. So we're still skiing all the way down to resort. Absolutely fantastic. The snow can be quite firm in the morning and then it is warm, so slushy in the afternoons lower down. But up above 2,600, we've still got perfect winter conditions. Absolutely amazing for this time of year. And the spring season is going to be fantastic. Skiing from 2,600 up all the way through May and then on the glacier all the way through June. See you on the hill.
Hi, this is Floss from Free Flow Ski, reporting today from Val Thorens, Val Thorens, as the French would say. Last week I was in Tignes and Val d'Isère in the northern French Alps in the Tarentaise Valley, and I have to be said, it was probably one of the best weeks of the season. Spring conditions, we had stable weather, which was amazing, with the avalanche level 1/2. Temperatures were stable at 4 degrees at 2,000 metres at 9 o'clock. Now, coming into Val Thorens this week, it has been an amazing week. We started Sunday with some cloud cover and colder conditions and then warming up to Monday and Tuesday. Now, all piste in Val Thorens is open and all lifts except two are open as well. The link to Merivale and Les Menuires in Courchevel side is now closed. However, there is amazing spring conditions in Val Thorens. We've had a melt freeze of around 2,500 over last night, which made the piece nice and hard and crispy. And then by 1 o'clock, this piece softened up, making it into some great spring conditions. Now, the snow cover is unbelievable for this time of year. It really has had a strong snowpack. Now, going into the off-piste, you can expect some variable terrain, hard, crusty areas in the morning, especially on north faces. However, if you wait for a little bit later and more sort of midday and afternoon and jump onto the south-facing mid-altitude slopes, then you can get some spring conditions, which is amazing. So everyone, if you can grab that last week, there's a last week in Val Thorens to come out last minute, I think it'll be really worth it as the snowpack is still very deep and strong and it's great spring conditions, whether it's Val Thorens or even in Tignes and Val d'Isère. And I hope everyone's had a great season and I'll speak to you again soon.
Hi Ian on the Ski Podcast. Welcome to the glorious sunny spring slopes of La Plan. This is Jen from That's La Plan and I am just skiing down from the Arpet restaurant back into Belcourt for those of you that know the La Plan area. And I'm here to just tell you a little bit about these conditions that we've got. It is the 21st of April today. And are we still skiing in April? Is there snow on the slope? Are the conditions good? Yes, yes, and you better believe it. Absolutely. Fantastic end of season April skiing conditions. So we are very much into spring skiing for sure, but the amount of snow coverage that we have got on the pistes is absolutely brilliant. Very, very good conditions, very firm, quite icy and polished in the mornings, softening up by about 10:30 to 11 o'clock. That's kind of the sweet spot. And then by later in the afternoon, start to feel very sugary up high and slushy on the lower down slopes. So yes, very spring conditions, but have been fantastic. The whole resort has been open till the end. We are in the last week of the season now, which means that the Vanoise Express open to the dark, so the Paris ski area is now closed and the lower areas are closed. So we are much more in the altitude skiing, but still great. It has been a really enjoyable season. What a wild one it's been, from absolutely no snow for a month to more snow that we can cope with and the resort being shut. But it really has led to a great end of season, to the point where I think we'll still have snow in resort as we get into June. Not to say we'll be skiing, but I think we'll be hiking around patches of snow. Anyway, this has been great. Thank you very much, Ian, for inviting me back one last time to share just how fantastic the skiing has been here in Le Plan this winter. And maybe I'll see you on the slopes of Le Plan next year. And I hope to be back with Ian and all of you at the Ski Podcast next year, telling you once again just how great the snow is here in the Alps. Take care. See you on the slopes.
Verbier is a tenth ski area I've skied at during my 5 weeks so far here in Chamonix. That's based on my own definition of having skis on snow. So that includes a visit to Courchevel earlier this month to take part in the Dinistar X3 triathlon. And if that sounds familiar to long-term listeners, that's because I covered it in episode 93 when I took part in the 2022 edition. And the reason I wanted to do it again is because it is a unique event. Instead of the standard swim, bike, run of a regular triathlon, it's a bike, run, ski touring event. So let's have a listen to a piece of audio I recorded just before the start. Okay, so we're at the start in the transition area for the Dinistar X3 triathlon, a unique triathlon. Starting off with a bike ride down at about 800 metres, climbing up here to Courchevel 1850. Then we've got a trail run through the woods behind me. That's still got about 250 metres of vertical in it. That'll be over 6 kilometres, 6.3 kilometres. And then after that, you've got a ski tour from here up to Celia, 2,700. That's another 950 metre climb. So it's pretty substantial. I did this once before, 4 years ago. It took me about 3.5 hours then, so in an ideal world, we'd take the same again today. It is a lot colder than when I did it last time. Last time it was a very hot day. Today it's pretty chilly and it might snow later on. Look, I don't propose to go into this here. There is a short video on the Skipedia YouTube channel you can watch. Plus, I'm going to be writing a piece for Full Line's Adventure magazine about it. What I will say is they describe it as a triathlon hors norme, a triathlon out of the ordinary, and that is definitely the case. It's a great challenge, and believe it or not, good fun. Now, I was thinking that this race would segue nicely into my conversation with Lou and some of the work you do, because you certainly need a positive mindset to take on a race like this. But your work on ski mindset focuses specifically on skiing. And before we move on to that ski coaching that you offer, I wondered if I could ask a little bit about your background and the more general coaching that you offer.
Yeah, for sure. But delighted to share that. So my background is as a physiotherapist. And a physio, for me, is very much about how do you motivate your patients to really pick up that baton and be focused on doing their own rehab and have that self-motivation. And then I went and worked in the military. So I worked for a training battalion, set up a physio service at RAF Linton up in Yorkshire, and then worked out in Northern Ireland. And that really introduced me to ergonomics, about how do you create an environment for people to perform at their best in the safest way. And ended up doing a master's at Loughborough in ergonomics and human factors, which was fascinating. And that introduced me to not just the physical environment, but also the emotional environment. And that became a really key part in my personal skiing journey, because whilst the physical environment can be intimidating, the emotional environment is really the one that can really tap into that mindset and create a negative mindset. And from then on, I then started working in the field of ergonomics and human factors, but also with people who had high levels of anxiety, who were off sick with mental health issues. And that took me down the route of how do you enable people to overcome the barriers that are holding them back? Low self-esteem, lack of confidence, anxiety, limiting self-beliefs. And in the meantime, going along with all this was my personal journey. So I came into skiing in my late 20s. I learnt with what I think is a very old-fashioned technique now called ski evolutif, which is where you learnt on really short skis, and had a terrifying experience where you were just taken everywhere because you could. Little jumps, steep bits, because the skis were so short, you just moved your body. And I really struggled with it. But at this point, my partner, or now my husband, was literally born on skis, loved it and wanted to go skiing. And so we teamed up together. And that was really my kind of early part of my journey.
Oh, with that ski evolutif, was that in Les Arcs? Because I seem to remember it always being associated with that resort.
It was Les Arcs, yes, it was.
And the theory was that you would start off on really short skis, and then as you progressed through your skills, you would get longer skis during that process.
Yes. Some of us did on very short skis all the time.
Yeah, I had a friend who learned on the ski evolutif plan, and he had a great story from his instructor. He said, when you were standing in the cable car, just hold your skis up above your head so you wouldn't look as if you were a beginner, so you could look as if you were on probably what was a 2 meter ski back then. That was his big tip for all of his clients.
Okay, well, so Lou, you progressed through the length of skis. That was your experience with skiing. When did the idea to bring skiing and that ski mindset come together?
Well, that was my personal journey. So I had rubbish hips. I was born with rubbish hips. And so by the time I was in my early 30s, I was, 36, I think, when I had both my hips replaced. So I had good reason to have some anxiety and hesitancy around my skiing. And the family loved skiing and we skied with other friends, but everybody was just so much better than me. And I had some hesitancy. And then you really start to build your anxiety. You start to create your own reality of that self-sabotaging. And everybody was very supportive, but it went on for a long time. And you'd just get the odd comment from somebody that would just make it even harder for you. And so by the time this was probably 9 years ago now, ended up having a really big skiing accident in Morzine, was taken out by a snowboarder at high speed, was on crutches for 4 months, thought I'd destroyed one of my hips. And that was my time where I thought, right, I need to think about this. Is this the right sport for me? But at that point, the kids were like going to do ski seasons. They really loved it. And it was a great family experience, but it was just pretty terrifying for me. So we then went skiing with some really good friends, and we were in, it was Champalouc, and we were stood at the top of a particular run, and a friend of mine, very similar level skier to me, he was looking at it, said, "Oh, Lou, do you fancy a coffee?" And I was looking at this run thinking, oh my God, it's too steep, it's too icy, it's too this, it's too that. And I just looked at him, how can you stand here being so relaxed, think it's okay just to go and have a coffee? And I'm here like just churning this and feeling that if I have a coffee, it's like a walk of shame. This is my light bulb moment. I am self-sabotaging. I'm doing this to myself.
That is really interesting. And it sounds that I already know, because of what you told me in the green room, that there is a crossover with what Dr. Carol Borter and Kimberly K. Robinson have discussed on the podcast before. I think back in episode 229, we discussed skiing without fear and some of the challenges that people bring into skiing. Very often women, a lot of their research is about how women drop out of skiing and the participation levels are not the same. So a lot of your courses and a lot of the work you do are really focused on helping women build up that confidence for their ski holidays. Is that right?
Not necessarily women. Interestingly, though, always women, but not because it's exclusive for women. It's just the men don't step forward. You know, they'll make inquiries, but it seems to be far more prevalent in women, and generally women who've learnt in their 20s and early 30s, rather than learning at childhood. So came skiing slightly later, I would say, would be another really common theme. And I think for me, it's because my professional background around physio and ergonomics and creating the right environment, but also going on and being a coach. So I went on to become a master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming to overcome my own anxiety. And that was my goal. I just wanted to relax back into it and love it with the family. And that really worked for me. And then it was Julia Brooks, the travel editor, travel doctor columnist for the Saturday Times weekend section. Somebody wrote into her and said, "I'm a really anxious skier. I'm going on holiday in 3 months. What course can I do to overcome my anxiety?" And I read that column and I thought, what's she going to say? And in fact, she at that point was directing them to more technical courses. I thought, oh, that's interesting. I don't think anybody else is doing what I'm doing. I need to start sharing what I've done with others. And that's when I started working with Ski 2 in Champalouc pre-COVID. So that was my first.
Right, okay. Well, it's something else that Shemi Alcott has mentioned when she's been on the podcast before is the extra pressures maybe that mums feel because they're getting everybody ready, maybe getting the kids ready to go out, they're preparing and they put themselves last at the back of the queue in relation to these things. So you're helping people prepare perhaps for their holiday and get the right mindset before they go out. That is one of the courses and packages that you do, right?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one I do the most. So it's about enabling people to really overcome that anxiety, understand their why, put their mindset not in that negative side where the anxiety is, but bring it over into the positive side so that they can find their way through it. And so it's very personal to each individual person because we all want something different out of our skiing. And my coaching is very much enabling people to understand how they want to feel and enabling them to get there.
And, you know, in respect of that, I'm aware that you're saying that it is personalized to everyone individually, but are there specific, you know, techniques that you help people develop?
Yes. Yes. So my very first question I ask all my clients is, why do you want to do this? Why do you literally want to do something that terrifies you? There's obviously a really strong inner drive there. And to enable you to understand that, because that why is really important. So I use that why whenever I'm in a situation, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, what am I doing here? This is terrifying. It's like, no, I'm here because I love it. I love being with the family. Look at the view. This is such a pleasure. We have such a laugh together. So really reconnecting with your why is so, so important because it can get buried very deeply below the anxiety and it's bringing it right up into your conscious mind. It's kind of that first step of understanding what it's all about for you, why it's so important.
And that's really interesting as well to me that you mentioned that I guess part of this journey started due to an accident you had. I think you said you were hit by a snowboarder. And this is something else that has cropped up in many of the conversations we've had on the podcast before, certainly in 229, but also when we were discussing some of the safe skiing areas and ski tranquille areas that ski resorts are starting to introduce. I think that possible fear is not necessarily driven by the fear of getting down a red slope or a black slope or whatever, but the fear of other people on any slope.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And in fact, I had a client who I spoke to only this week and she had gone skiing. She came over from Australia and she was skiing in Morzine and we'd done all the coaching. She was really ready. She was really up for it. The first morning, 9:30 on the first morning, she gets taken out by a young lad on skis who just piles through her. He ends up in a heap about 20 metres below her. And it was really interesting. She said, you know, Lou, in the past, that would have been it. I would have walked off the slopes. I would not have skied. That would have been it. But she said, no, I just felt so much more resilient. It's like, well, these things happen. I got myself up. I dusted myself down. I went and had a coffee with my friends. I kind of reset myself. And I was ready to go again. She said it felt so different because she had shifted her whole perception of her skiing and how she felt about her skiing.
That must be so satisfying for you, having been through that process and then having the worst possible scenario and finding a client who's been able to find the right tools to get through that.
Oh, it's as I can't even begin to tell you, Ian, how satisfying. I literally love my job. The feedback that I get, the stories that the clients tell me that they just feel like their skiing is so different. They had no idea they could feel like this. The impact it has on them and the family, because generally the women are the ones who've been stepping back and being the anxious ones. And suddenly they're picking up the baton and their family see how hard they've worked and the difference it is. And they see that difference on the slopes. They're like, wow, you know, mum, that's incredible. I can't believe you've done that. That's amazing. So it shifts that whole focus. It's so empowering for women to take control of that anxiety. So empowering.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so those are pre-holiday courses that you offer people where they're going to develop the skills to build confidence, reduce fear and anxiety. I think you told me again in the green room that for next winter, you're looking to put together an actual week on the mountain focused on developing those skills for women?
Yes. So what I've done in the past and has worked really well is have a group of people coming out on a ski trip and we do the coaching leading up to it. And then I go out with them and we work with an instructor because I'm not the technical person here in any way, shape or form. And we do the coaching on a day-to-day basis. So it's really working with them to reflect every day what's working well, what's not working well, how we can build on it. And then you get that camaraderie, that team spirit, which is amazing. So really, really love working on those trips. So Carol and I, Dr. Carol Porter and I, are going to be doing one in Italy next year. So we'll just be putting plans together over the summer. And then with Peak Retreats, I'm going to be the coaching for them, but won't join them on their particular one. But we'll provide that support probably from a distance. We'll see how it goes. It's about developing these holidays and just getting feedback and building on them to really hone them for my clients. Yeah.
Oh, well, that is fantastic. I will put links in the show notes to your website so listeners can find out more about that. That is brilliant. If it's okay with you, I'm going to turn to James now. There actually is a connection, as I know you've delivered some great sessions at the London Snow Show back in the autumn. And as listeners will know, James is organiser of the show. We will touch on that later. But the reason, James, I asked you on the show today is actually to share your experiences of skiing in Risoul and Var this winter. And I thought it might be useful to start with the basics, as in, are these resorts that we're talking about? Because I'm thinking that most listeners probably won't have heard of them. And how would you get there and what your connection to that area is?
Yes, so most of your listeners will probably know Serre Chevalier. That's the kind of, you know, one of the major southern French Alps resorts. So Risoul Var are about half an hour away from Serre Chevalier, or at least half an hour away from Briançon, which is the kind of the, you know, the easternmost point of the Serre Chevalier ski area. So you are in the southern French Alps. Nearest airport is actually Turin in Italy. That's a little bit less than 2 hours. Although my tip would always be to fly to Marseille, because flights to Marseille in the winter, funnily enough, are pretty cheap because it's a summer destination. It's a 2.5 hour drive up from Marseille, up into the mountains. It's a beautiful drive. And going from that kind of sea to mountains is always exciting. So that's where we are.
Oh, okay. That makes sense to me. Regular listeners will know that I traveled to Nice to go skiing in Isola a little while ago, and I could certainly back up that sea to the mountains experience. And if you're actually talking about picking slightly different airports for lower prices, again, quite some time ago, I'll put a link in the show notes. I went out to Roccarazzo in the Italian Apennines and went to Naples at half term, way cheaper than trying to get to Geneva. What about your connection with that area? What has led you to explore the two resorts of Risoul and Var recently?
So my connection is to the region is quite long-standing. So I used to spend a lot of time in Serre Chevalier back in my Ski World special events days. We used to run the Army Ski Championships in Serre Chevalier. So I spent the whole of January out there and always really liked it. It's got quite a different feel, I think, to the northern French Alps where you are in Chamonix and in other areas. There's more sunshine 300 days a year, and there's a lot more trees. That's probably the two things that stand out. So I knew the area fairly well, but as you know, I ran the ListX events for many years. And one of the great things about running ListX was getting to meet all of these new resorts that I hadn't known before. So discovered Drysinnen, which I know you visited recently through ListX, which I'd never heard of. I'd heard of Risoul, but I'd never been there, didn't know much about it. And the resort of Risoul, or at least a hotelier for Risoul, came to ListX a few years ago with the Southern French Alps region. So, you know, really proactive tourist board who were trying to promote the whole region. And we were looking for a summer holiday destination. And they said, well, you know, why don't you come out in the summer and have a look around? And we thought, that sounds great. So we went out there a couple of summers ago, had a brilliant time. And then my wife, Babsy, who's been on the podcast, who is our CEO at MTM, runs all the events, who is, not somebody who hangs around getting things done, fell in love with the area and was determined to buy a house there. So within, I think, probably 2 months of returning, we suddenly owned a property, not in Risoul itself, but in a little village called Guillest, which is about 20 minutes down the hill from Risoul. And it's just a wonderful, perfect French mountain town.
And so the ski areas themselves, and I'm referring them as two areas, but it's one interconnected area, is that right?
It's one interconnected area, yeah. So classic kind of French resort where you've got, you know, two base villages and then effectively the two mountains meet at a ridge. So whether you base yourself in Vars or in Risoul, you can access the whole mountain. It's one interconnected ski area.
And what sort of size is the area that we're looking at?
So I think technically it's 185 kilometres. As we know, it always depends how you measure these things. It feels big, right? It feels like a good big 200 kilometre. I was out there twice last year, once at New Year, once at half term. You know, I never felt like in a week skiing, I never felt like I was kind of bored or wondering where to go. It's a big ski area. There's a lot of terrain. There's a lot of off-piste as well. So, you know, as always, we measure these things in Europe in terms of kilometres. Obviously, in North America, they measure it in terms of acreage. So I always think, well, you kind of need to combine a bit of both to get a sense of sort of how big the area is. But it's a, yeah, it's a proper size ski area.
That is a really good way of expressing it. And I think, you know, kilometres a piece can be so misleading, because I can't remember who I was chatting to the other day, but they were referring to a ski resort that had like a, you know, an 8 kilometre green run that kind of looped all the way around following the contour lines, like boosting up the number of kilometres of piece. What about the snow? I mean, you said you could fly into Marseille. It's obviously quite a long way south. And, you know, it's a bit of a leading question, because I went to Isola where it's also very south and they had amazing snow, but tell me, you know, it might be.
Yeah, I mean, it's that thing again, isn't it? You know, you're absolutely right about the, you know, about the kind of the way you measure. I mean, to give another sense of the scale, as I said, I've just gone back from a week in Whistler. I would say the Rizal Vars area feels a similar size to Whistler, which is normally considered to be a pretty considerable ski area, but just a different way of measuring it. There's a number of things, isn't there, that affects the snow quality. Obviously, the fact it's further south. It's at 1850, so Rizal is 1850 metres. I think Vars might be 1800, something like that. So, you know, you're at the same height as Courchevel and Val d'Isère, and the skiing goes up to about 2,700 metres. So, again, you know, you're coming down into the village. I mean, generally speaking, you're coming down into a village that has snow, and you're skiing at, you know, pretty high altitude. The other thing which you touched on at the beginning, Ian, obviously with your experience right now in Chamonix, is slope aspects is a massive thing, as is wind. But so one of the great things that I really love about the area is it's really varied. So you've got trees, you've got alpine bowls, but actually having the two resorts from Vars and Rizal means you've got different aspect slopes. Generally speaking, Vars is a little bit more southerly. So the tip we had from our local friend was when we were there in New Year, ski Vars mainly. And then we were there in February, ski Rizal. So you kind of move across to the time of year depending. So, I mean, look, as Lou said, this year was an incredible season. The snow was absolutely unbelievable. So, you know, I may have been treated, but it's a high altitude area, lots of north facing slopes and lots of sunshine.
Oh, I like the sound of that. And I have actually been to Rizal. You know, years ago, I worked for Crystal and I was doing some contracting, and I don't know, they had a hotel there. I had to go to a hotel. And what I recall of it is it's probably not the most attractive resort out there in terms of the architecture, the buildings. It's more of a modern, I guess you'd probably call it a third generation French resort. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a classic purpose-built French resort. So, you know, very, very convenient. You know, a lot of the accommodation is ski in, ski out. They are doing a lot of work to kind of clad the older buildings with wood and make them more attractive. There's a lot of new development going on. I think Rizal is planning to add 5,000 beds over the next few years. And those, you know, those will be very attractive, modern, you know, wooden type apartments. But yes, it's a classic French high altitude resort. It's not as pretty as a little Tyrolean village, but, you know, spectacular setting, super convenient, and some great restaurants. So still a very nice place to spend your time.
We mentioned it has 180 plus kilometres of slopes that can mean a lot of things. Who would you say it's suitable for then as a holiday? You mentioned there's off-piste and ski touring as well. Does it tick all boxes, or would you say it's more of a family destination?
I think it does tick all boxes. So I was there in February with a group of about 30, kind of whole mixed abilities. So I think the youngest kids we had were 7 and 8, right up to my kids who are now significantly older than that. All range of abilities. Obviously, I've been skiing a long time and like to get off piste when I can and see what there is to do. You know, everybody loved it. There's some great beginner terrain. There's some great kind of mid-mountain skiing. Lots of nice kind of, you know, flowing reds and blues that I think everybody enjoys. There's some great off piste. I was lucky enough to have a half day just after, I think, about half a meter of snow. And we went right up to the ridge at 2,700 meters. Skied down and out an open bowl, and then you descend into the trees. So the whole area is known as the Forêt Blanche, or the White Forest. So there's a lot of tree skiing, and they're larch trees, which is different again to the Northern Alps. And one of the great things about larch trees is that the way they grow is that they're slightly differently spaced to some of the some of the kind of fir trees that you get, which is almost as if they were designed for tree skiing, because actually they're just wide enough that it's a kind of perfect path through the trees. So I mean, that is honestly one of the best runs I've ever done. You know, to start off in kind of the high alpine bowl and then descend through the trees, pop out in the village, probably a 10-minute hike at the top and a 10-minute hike at the bottom. So, yeah, I mean, genuinely, I don't think there's anyone that it's not suitable for. I think everyone would have a great time. If you get the snow and you can get off piste, there's plenty to challenge more advanced skiers for sure.
Well, I mean, that is an amazing recommendation that is amongst the best ever runs that you've done. So, yeah. Listener, another one to add to your list. And I need to go back there and ski it as well. I'd like to get down to Serre Chevalier, and I know you can combine the two. We've had listeners do that before. Now, I mentioned that Lou was at the snow show last year, and you are the organiser, so it'd be remiss of me if I didn't ask you about this year's show coming up. One of the most exciting pieces of news for me is that I hear the famous fashion show is going to be back this year.
It is indeed, yeah. So, you know, we were delighted with the first year of the show. And in general, everything that went on year one is coming back year two. But of course, it would be wrong not to add some more things. Plus, it's the 50th edition of the show, so we had to mark it in some way. So, yeah, we kind of looked back and said, you know, what can we add? What was missing from the first show? And I think the fashion show is, as you know, Ian, and as listeners know who've been to shows in the past, the fashion show was always a hugely iconic part of the show. And it was a great opportunity. If you're an exhibiting brand, it's an opportunity, whether you're, you know, clothing or accessories, so goggles, gloves, to just get out in front of everyone and show what you've got. And then, of course, you can have the follow-up that people can then and chat to you on the stand. So it was always a really exciting part of the show. It was always one of the busiest parts of the show. So, yeah, we're bringing it back for 2026, which is really exciting.
Oh, and I take it that won't just be on a particular day. That'll be at different times during the whole of the weekend. Is that how that will work?
Absolutely. Yeah. So no, we'll be through the whole time. So it's going to be upstairs. If anyone came to the show this year, it's where the Nordic feature was. Last year, the Nordic feature is moving downstairs. So we've got there's a sort of kink in Olympia where actually the National Hall and the Grand Halls go. And it happens to be exactly the right shape for a catwalk. So that was part of our thinking, is going, that would make a great spot for the fashion show, wouldn't it? So yes, it's going to be a permanent feature. It's going to be there. So it will have a catwalk and everything else. We will have an MC taking you through, and we'll have various sessions. So, you know, there'll be sessions focused on, you know, high performance technical clothing, trends for next year, what's coming, you know, value, you know, the value pieces that are coming out, kids clothing. You know, we'll try and make sure that kind of each session is sort of targeting a certain area. We've got some great speakers lined up as well to talk about, you know, what's new in clothing. Obviously, you covered it with Al, things like the environmental factors and, you know, how you buy clothing that has a longer lifespan, how you take care of your kit, all of those things.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely very interested in that side of things. And, you know, I will be at the show too, hopefully with Al on the Saturday morning for our brief on the best equipment to look out for. Plus, I'll be moderating a session on night trains on the sustainability stage and sharing my experiences of taking our dog to the Alps. We have her with us here. I think that last one is going to be on the Sunday, which means I might have competition for that presentation, as I think you have plans to make Sunday a Legends Day. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the plan at the moment. So we, you know, we're celebrating the 50th edition of the show, as we said. And so we wanted to do something special. So our plan at the moment is that, you know, we're shamelessly nicking the Glastonbury idea, right? So the idea is we'll have the Mountain Theatre that Shenny is hosting once again. And Saturday will be a mix of, you know, mix of speakers and presentations and panels. On the Sunday, we have polled our wonderful audience of showgoers since 2021 and said, you know, who are your legends of snow sports? Who are the people that have inspired you over the years? And we've compiled that into a top 10. I'm not going to reveal names here because nothing is confirmed yet, just as Glastonbury wouldn't for their legend stage. But yeah, the idea is that, you know, we've got some good ins into some of these legendary figures. So, you know, freestyle athletes, racers, whoever it may be. And the idea is that we're going to get some along to the show. You can come along and meet your heroes on the Sunday. So yeah, look out for more announcement on who's going to be there soon.
Just going to say, chipping in, I was walking through the centre of Chamonix the other day and I saw Glenn Plake on a mountain bike. And, oh, you're Glenn, aren't you?
Hi. There you go.
Do you mind if I just shake your hand? That was a very exciting moment for me. And
amazing.
I think, you know, what you're looking to do there is to kind of bring some of those legends into the show and bring that excitement for other people. Lou, who would be your pick for a legend then?
Oh, well, no, well, that's interesting. Well, I think Chemi is absolutely brilliant. I think she's a trailblazer. And I think the way she commentated the Olympics, she is incredible. She brings her whole self to it and such passion, such enthusiasm. And yeah, I think she's incredible. But I also want to do a shout out because the well-being stage at the London Snow Show, which is I'm going to be running this year, and it's the second year that we're doing this stage, isn't it, James? And it's really exciting. Yep. That's around the well-being. It's going to be around mindset. It's going to be around fitness. It's going to be all about food, nutrition, about sleep. We've got some great experts coming along. So that's also really, really exciting.
Oh, well, I certainly second what you said about Chemi there. She's fantastic when she's been on the podcast. And in fact, she's going to be on in about a month's time when I'm going to be asking her in more detail about her experiences during the Winter Olympics, and particularly that moment when she was commentating when Lindsey Vonn got injured, which is a very personal moment for her. James, can you just remind us of the dates of the London show?
It's essentially the same weekend as last year, so 17th and 18th of October. So the Saturday and the Sunday kicks off at 10 a.m. on Saturday, and tickets are going to be available next month, so keep an eye on the website.
Oh, and listeners, for free and discounted tickets, keep listening to the podcast as we'll be releasing these as we go. That's brilliant, James. Thank you very much for that. We're just going to move towards a close now. Listener, if you enjoyed this episode, even if you didn't like it, I would love to know. You can leave a comment on Spotify, Instagram or Facebook. Our handle is @theskipodcast, or you can drop me an email, theskipodcast@gmail.com. Look in the show notes for a link to our WhatsApp channel where you can find exclusive material released ahead of each podcast. We do have a bit of feedback since the last episode. Helen Keith said, I want to let you know how much I've been enjoying the podcast. I listen to every episode and look forward to each new one. I especially love the features on different resorts. So hopefully, Helen, you like today. Enjoyed the equipment reviews at the start of the season and the Olympic coverage. She also sent me a link to an interview she gave on train travel on the Alpine Property podcast, during which she mentioned Ski Flight Free. So that is very kind of you, Helen, and hopefully it will help others to take the train. Emily Ruth Given said, love the podcast. Paul and Tierney listened to episode 308 and Gaustad, another area in Norway I'm looking at, and didn't realize this was the same area Heavy Water was made. That was due to Mike Richards giving an extended snow report. Anna bought me a coffee. Very kind of you, Anna. She said, thank you for the podcast. Just discovered it and binged it driving across Newfoundland for a ski at Marble Mountain. I love the ski safari idea in episode 307. And Jan Klaren on Instagram said, thank you for the podcast. It's great to listen to and travel with you and your guests. There are now 310 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with. 142 of them were listened to in the last week. If you'd like to get some insight on a particular destination or latest kit, just go to skipodcast.com, have a search around the tags and categories, and you're bound to find something you'll find of interest to listen to. That's it for this week. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time when I'll be reporting from the final day of the season at Grandmonte. Plus, we'll find out about the ski resorts of Champaluc in Italy and what it's like skiing in Albania. In the meantime, please do subscribe. If you do, it helps other people find us. Plus, if you enjoy the podcast, you can always buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/theskipodcast. That is it for now. So I would like to thank my guest today. Lou, thank you very much.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
And James.
Thank you, Ian. Delighted to be here. Delighted to share this with Lou as well. The work she does is absolutely fantastic, and I'm so delighted she's coming back to the show. So thank you for having me.
I would like to thank Tyrol for sponsoring the podcast. And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.